Welcome to the show. Thanks for downloading. Yeah. Welcome to the Flawn Air Podcast. Straight out of London, UK. It's where we broadcast. Thanks for tuning in and taking your time. Arts and culture reviews you'll find. We're the top podcast out in London, UK. A great time is what we're fronting every day. Without further ado, let's start the show. Sit back, relax, enjoy. Let's go. Thanks for joining us for episode 17 of the London Arts Review podcast from the Flawn Air. This week we see the new Kurt Cobain documentary, Cobain, Montage of Heck, and Painting Paradise, an exhibition which celebrates the garden in art at the Queen's Gallery. We also speak to Jude Cowan-Montague about her innovative arts radio show on Resonance FM, and have new music from Kid Galahad. But first we meet up with London's Gin Monkey to learn about the fascinating subject of gin. What's your favourite gin? If that question has got you thinking, isn't gin just gin? You need a gin tasting evening. Gin is enjoying a renaissance. And to learn more, I went along to the Guide to Bluffing Your Way Through Gin course at Bourne and Hollingsworth Buildings. Led by Emma from Gin Monkey, who is an expert on all things ginny, I left able to distinguish Old Tom from Geneva and knowing never ever to add lime to Beefeater London Dry. Bourne and Hollingsworth Buildings is a chic, mismatched chairs, fashion magazines lying around, well-stocked bar type of place in EC1. It was the first sunny evening I remember, and the large windows were open, looking across the road at the local park. Five neophytes gathered around the bottles, a flight of five gins facing us. Early gin history is necessarily hazy. Anyone interested enough to write about it was too pickled to write about it. But we learned of its Dutch origins. Gin is the original Dutch courage, and its 18th century popularity relative to beer, as it wasn't taxed and anyone could make it. Though we were all scholars and intrigued by the Glorious Revolution's part in London's gin craze, we were really there for the gin. First up was Bol's Geneva, made according to an 1820 recipe. This Dutch gin is made from malted alcohol, giving it something of a toasted whiskey vibe. Jensen's is an example of an Old Tom, popular in the 19th century. This type of gin was sweetened, originally to take away the appalling taste of the cheap, unregulated gins prevalent at the time. For obvious reasons, it's the correct gin to use in a Tom Collins. London Dry was the first attempt to regulate gin making. The name is not geographically protected, unlike Champagne, Cornish pasties, and oddly, Plymouth gin. So your London gin could be made anywhere, but it had to reach certain standards. Beefeater, with its citrus overtones, is the classic example, and is actually still made in Kennington. Ford's is the exciting new kid on the gin block. With the strapline, it doesn't take an empire to make a gin. It is designed in part for bartenders, with a measuring scale down the bottle and a perfect balance for pouring. It also lists all the botanicals and where they come from on its label, so on a rainy Saturday you could try and make your own at home. Except, of course, that's illegal. Finally, we sipped the Hendrix, flavoured with cucumber and rose. More delicate flavours, but I was already sold on the original Geneva. Unusual, and not what I would have expected from a gin, but the malted highlight was an enjoyable change. The only trouble is, with my newfound knowledge, I'll never be able to order a simple G&T again.
When hay fever pollen invades your sinuses, brings runny nose, watery eyes, take Dristan. Dristan's like sending your sinuses to Arizona. Yes, Dristan's like sending your sinuses to Arizona.
Resonance FM is the world's first radio art station. It features programs made by musicians, artists, and critics who represent the diversity of London's art scenes. One of its shows is The News Agents, which analyzes, discusses, and creatively responds to newsmaking and international stories. We met up with its curator, Jude Cowan-Montague, and asked her first to say something about her own background and how that had led to the creation of The News Agents.
Well, I've been an artist and a musician for yonks, but what I have done in my more recent career is I worked as an archivist for Reuters. I did a PhD actually in film history, and that led me into working in archives. And I ended up working in news archive. So I was working at ITN for Reuters on the Reuters news desk. And what I did there was I was cataloguing all the international news stories, news agency stories as they came in each day. And that led me to writing poetry about this initially, which was superb experience for me because it helped me process all the information in a different way. And I felt much more connected to what was going on and not so much like somebody in an office. And then that led me on to doing improvisation, music improvisations on the stories, which was quite scary because obviously you don't want to be make a mess of how your attitude is to the stories, if that makes any sense. What you want to do is treat it with sensitivity, but within this slightly da-da treatment. And that was a really great learning experience as an improviser. And then after that, onto the radio show where news meets arts.
The program's called The News Agents. How did that name come about?
Basically, I wanted to call it The Wires originally because the news agency stories that come in are called The Wires. Okay. But there is a very famous experimental magazine that supports the Resonance FM, which is the radio station that the news agency is on. So they didn't really want it to be called The Wires because of that confusion. So the news agents popped into my head. And I thought, yes, that's great, because it has that affinity with the shop, the news agents that we all know. And that's a really nice thing because it brings it down to earth, because I also want to demystify the world of news, which can be quite off-putting and quite mysterious for people who aren't professionals in it, because it has its own little ways of working and the ways in which news gets to the table. Because I like to bring together art activities with news. So I might have an artist responding to a news story in a sound art piece created live in the studio.
Could you describe how a typical episode would pan out?
Yeah, they've all been quite different. But maybe, for example, one time we had Ian Overton, director of the Charity Against Armed Violence. He was a great guest, so he talked about his really interesting and dangerous and challenging work of going around the world campaigning against armed violence in different ways. So we had him for a while. And then we had a sound artist, Jo Thomas, and she did an audio piece about a couple of stories that Ian had highlighted on his blog. So there was a story about pink guns, girls using pink guns in America, and the marketing people who are trying to sell guns to young girls by making them, pink and fluffy. And she did this really amazingly emotional and creative piece with her voice live in the studio. And it was, it just made it really like intense experience. And that was great fun.
I listened to an episode last night and I noticed you're also a singer. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been a vocalist for many, many moons. Yeah, that's really my background, I guess.
And the songs are quite, or certainly the title of the one I heard is quite unusual, about three species of ants. Are all your songs, how can I put it? Well, they're not mainstream.
Odd. Yeah, mostly they are. I don't really like I Love You, You Love Me, although maybe I do like that, but I like a lot of other things as well. And it seems to me that the kind of things people are allowed or is conventional to sing about are actually quite narrow. And also, I think especially girls, being a feminist, I find girls are encouraged to take on these rather cliche roles when they start singing. And I don't see why we have to be so cliche when we start singing. Why can't we take songs into other territory, art into other territory? And it's all really about that. So Three Species of Ants, that's another Reuters news story about a Reuters edit from the section about the environment and science. So it's about scientists taking ants from a Panamanian habitat into a laboratory testing box and watching them behave with each other. So why not think about that? You could take it from a socio-biological standpoint and say that nature is a metaphor for how people behave, and we can learn a lot from that. So put it in a song.
Absolutely, and it is unusual for the charts, that sort of topic.
Yeah, I wasn't imagining I would get very great ratings, but you know what? It might be better to have a few people who are really interested in what you do than try and bland something out and aim it for a mass market that might not even really exist. It might exist more in your head or in the head of weird corporate marketeers or a sort of pretending it exists.
Absolutely. So do you have any gigs coming up?
Yeah, I can never remember them. I have so many. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to BBC Radio Shropshire to be on Genevieve Tudor's folk show, which is called Sunday Folk, at the end of the month. So everybody can listen to that if they're interested, because it will be on BBC iPlayer. So Sunday Folk, it's the last Sunday of April with Genevieve Tudor.
Excellent. And when's your programme on Resonance FM?
That goes out on Saturdays at 2:30 to 3:30.
You can find Jude's show on Resonance FM at resonancefm.com. Or if you're in the London area, you can tune in to 104.4 FM.
Don't think there ain't no Santa Claus. I know darn well there is, because my kitties do at 2 to 2 today.
Gardens of Britain, your show of the year, has opened at the Queen's Gallery. The story of the garden in art, painting paradise is full of views, botanical prints and paintings of regal gardens. Whilst demonstrating the depth of the royal collection, this large show explores how the garden inspires artists and craftsmen between 1500 and early 20th century. Gardens, as a man-made construct and enclosed space of controlled nature, are first seen in Persia. These early examples of aesthetic cultivation are represented by the painted miniature Seven Couples in a Garden, from the earliest illustrated Islamic manuscript in the royal collection. This shows the first attempt at an earthy paradise that subsequent gardeners try to achieve throughout the rest of the show. As in most things, fashion change and the exhibition does a fine job of showing the way the idea of the perfect garden has changed over time. Gardens have been used as statements of power and status, as well as private expressions of love and family life. Wife killer Henry VIII first used the garden for propaganda, using it as a means to express power over his rivals. The show includes the work The Family of Henry VIII, which shows the great garden at Whitehall Palace, and is the first time a real garden appears in British art. The introduction of flowers to gardens happens late in the 19th century, in keeping with the Victorian love of euphemism. A complicated language of flowers quickly grew up, with different flowers embodying different feelings and areas. These are demonstrated in the show, but are further revealed in the learning room outside the exhibition. The Queen's Gallery always puts on a fun interactive learning room. No doubt supposedly for kids, the various examples of scents to sniff are overpowering. It also includes more details about the language of flowers. So the next time someone gives you a bouquet, you know what they mean, assuming the flowers weren't just the only ones left at the garage.
Kurt Cobain's music is just as he describes in Cobain Montage of Heck: high tempo, high octane, rock and roll. In his short life as lead singer of Nirvana, he wrote short, visceral songs that never outstayed their welcome. But Cobain Montage of Heck, the documentary authorised and contributed by his family, hasn't been inspired by this brevity. The film doesn't concentrate on the parts of Cobain's life that will appeal to fans. Instead, it's a cradle-to-grave biography that clocks in at over 2 hours. Kurt Cobain, lead singer, guitarist and songwriter of Nirvana, remains an icon 20 years after his death. But the film spends far too long on scenes that add too little to an understanding of his story. There is long home video footage of Cobain playing with his daughter as a baby, far too much time devoted to his baby birthday parties. Early Super 8 of his parents is also unnecessarily in the mix. There is a sense that much of the footage has been used just because it exists. No documentary, especially one about a suicidal heartthrob rock star, needs so many images of the subject's childhood and early life of his parents. Unlike Nick Broomfield's 1998 documentary Kurt and Courtney, which was not allowed to use Nirvana's music, Kurt's voice and lyrics resound through the film. The involvement of the family is clear in other ways. There are long, often unnecessary interviews with people, including his stepmother, who admits to kicking him out of the house. This early family rejection is blamed for Cobain's unhappiness. along with an ongoing stomach complaint. These are portrayed as the reasons that he turned to drugs. But the lengthy film doesn't cover the most contentious part of Cobain's story. It ends with the bald fact of his death, just when some analysis or detail is needed. Should a documentary about a well-known suicide not discuss that episode? It is more relevant than his third birthday or his daughter's hair being cut. If you want information about Cobain's death, then you will have to return to Broomfield's earlier documentary. Here, in Cobain Montage of Heck, there is no mention of the conspiracy theories concerning his death, no mention of the accusations against Courtney Love that have been levelled by people including her own father. Dave Grohl isn't interviewed, but crops up in archive footage. Interestingly, no one who is interviewed shows much emotion, except for Chris Novoselic, bassist in the band with Grohl and Cobain. A tighter film would have been more successful. The impression is that the family insisted on everyone getting screen time. Cobain Montage of Heck is overlong and full of extraneous detail, but it is a rounded portrait of one of rock's self-destructive characters.
Thanks to Jude Cowan Montagu and our contributors and presenters, Taryn Richardson and Katie Smith. Find out more at www.flanair.london and contact us on podcast@flanair.london. We finish the show with the angry lyrics of Vestibule by Kid Galahad. Thanks for listening.